State in the interest of AA, if counsel could please step forward. May we please have appearances?
Good morning, Your Honor. Deputy Attorney General Frank Murphy, on behalf of the State of New Jersey.
Okay, I'm the Assistant Deputy Public Defender on behalf of the AA.
William Munoz, of Google Azzarello, on behalf of the Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers.
Good morning, Your Honor. Laura Cohen, Marcus Cremonius, Justice Clinic, appearing on behalf of the ACLU of New Jersey Community.
On my list, I had the ACLU speaking before the ACDL. Have you guys flipped on purpose, or?
We did discuss flipping, Your Honor. If you prefer that we do it the other way.
We'll do it your way. No problem.
Thank
Mr. Murawski.
May it please the court. Let's say we'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
That's fine.
The trial court in this case made two important factual findings that should dictate the result here. The trial court found that the police were not involved in the answers or the questions between the juvenile and his mother. And the trial court also found that the police used no invasive means to overhear the conversation in which they were in full view. The police here adhered to the requirement of State versus Pressure. They require that they call the parent and let them know that their child has been detained. The police, when the mother responded, she became visibly upset and asked to speak to her child. The police simply allowed her to do that. Police, there was no planning or coordination. There was no suggestion or urging on the part of the police that she speak to him or ask him anything in particular. The police simply allowed her to do that. Now, the police were simply standing in full view of everyone when she spoke loudly enough and asked questions to which the juvenile answered. The juvenile answered in ways that the officer recorded and the state used in its prosecution. But the state did not do anything to elicit these statements. The state did not do anything to encourage these statements. And the suggestion of amici and defendant that the parents should have been given warnings on the telephone, there is no such thing as Miranda warnings for visitors. The police only have to give Miranda warnings to someone who's in custody prior to custodial interrogation. The police, as it turned out, did not interrogate the juvenile. Therefore, there were no warnings required. No warnings were called for under the circumstances. The police adhered to their requirements. It did not violate any laws, and that the judge's factual findings should be affirmed and dictate the results in this case, and the appellate division opinion should be reversed and the trial court's opinion reinstated.
Are you done with your opening
yes.
statement? Could the police have installed a microphone 12 feet away from the holding cell and recorded all conversations between parent and child?
Well, it would depend on whether it was being done in a deceptive way. It would be a different case.
Let's assume they put up a 8x10 piece of paper that says, microphone here, recording all conversations.
If it was clear to everybody that the microphone was there recording everything, yes, they can do that. As long as it's clear to the parent who's there. The parent is there to actually act as a buffer. The parent is there to actually if there is any need to protect their child, the parent is actually there for that. And if the parent speaks loudly enough for the police to hear it or for a recording to be made, as long as it's fully warned, as long as the police are not being deceitful or deceptive and unfair in any way, then the Miranda is certainly not violated, nor is Prussia.
So you're quoting the language from Prussia about serving as a buffer, and the court also in Prussia spoke about assisting the child in understanding his or her rights. Were those aims met in this case?
Well, the pressure also made clear that the parent is not a lawyer. So they're not to necessarily treat the parent as if they would be a lawyer. It's not a State versus Sugar situation where they're eavesdropping onto the client-attorney relationship.
How did the parent serve as a buffer? How did the parent help the child in the understanding of rights in this case?
Well, in this case, the mother can It's presumed in the nature of the parent-child relationship that the parent can tell their child anything at that point. The parent can encourage their child to cooperate with the police. The parent can encourage their child to confess. This court has recognized that a parent can do that.
All those things, but in this case, unlike other cases, the parent, who's supposed to act as a buffer, doesn't know her rights. The child doesn't know her rights.
Well,
let's say an objectively reasonable scenario, child is arrested in a detention cage. The mother comes and is told, your son has been arrested in an attempted murder case. There are police officers all around. Now you can go speak with your child. Isn't it objectively reasonable under those circumstances that some incriminatory information will be elicited? The mother is going to speak with the child. The mother doesn't know her rights. The child doesn't know his rights. They don't know that whatever is said can be used in a law against them. Isn't that a complete end run around Miranda? Go ahead.
It's not an end run around Miranda. Miranda only requires, now, if the mother acted as an agent of the police, if the police encouraged her to talk, maybe if the police invited her to talk.
They don't do any of those things, but they know by just letting her go up there when she's ignorant, uninformed about her rights, she's going to be asking her questions like, what did you do? Why in here? And that's likely to elicit some sort of incriminating remark.
First of all, the state disagrees with the notion that the parent's automatically going to solicit incriminating answers. She may be inquiring into his welfare. The parent may be going up to the child to say, don't say anything. She may incriminate exculpatory information from the child. It should not be presumed that the child is going to bombard her, that the mother is going to bombard her child with questions that could incriminate him. This circumstance could take place anywhere. What if they arrest the child at his home in front of the mother and they don't intend on asking them any questions?
What rights does the mother have that she should be warned of?
The mother has no rights. Where
would the Miranda warnings come as to the mother? Where would be that requirement?
If the police were going to ask questions of the juvenile, then the mother would have to be there in the presence of the police when those warnings are being given.
So that's a good point. And go back a step. Why did the police call for a parent altogether? The officer testified it was protocol. What was the reason underlying the protocol?
Well, it doesn't say the protocol. Presumably they were adhering to pressure. The detective was under the impression that the parent needed to be there. If you were going to interrogate, that the parent had to consent to the interrogation.
Right. So the police summon mom to show up at headquarters, presumably in order to be able to take a statement. Did the police make any effort to take a statement from the juvenile?
They did not, and presumably it could be inferred from the record when they saw how upset the mother was, they probably abandoned their efforts at that point. Certainly they would wish to have conducted a statement. They didn't get all that much from the defendant. Defendant never admitted to shooting anybody. Defendant never admitted to possessing a gun. They already knew he was there from other officer testimony.
They got something pretty incriminating, which is they jumped us last week.
That's a motive.
And that he was there,
but an officer, they already saw him there. The police probably would have wished to have conducted more of an interrogation, but presumably when they saw how upset the mother was, they abandoned their interrogation.
Or they may have felt they had enough.
And even if they did learn something that helped them and they wanted to use, that doesn't mean that they did something wrong. There's nothing wrong with the police overhearing people blurt out useful information.
There may not be, provided that the people who are doing the blurting out are informed of their rights, that the child, 15 years old, knows that when he's speaking to his mother, that whatever he says is going to be used in court against him.
That could be true at any place. That could be true.
Wouldn't that come up as a Miranda warning after you begin the interrogation, not beforehand?
Well, just prior proceeding interrogation.
Is there a requirement that you can be Mirandized even before they're questioned?
They should be Mirandized before being questioned, and the mother should be there before they even do that.
Is even a better situation for them if this is okay, because we don't have to Mirandize the kid, the mother. We have a bunch of police officers here. We'll just let the mother speak with the child, okay, unwarned, and let's see what we get. Maybe they'll ask a, a, a bunch of innocuous things. How's the weather? Did you like the ball game last night? Or maybe the mother will say, why are you in here? Did you do anything wrong? Which would be seem to be some of the natural questions that a mother might ask of a child.
There's no guarantee the child would answer those questions. The child doesn't Childs are oftentimes more afraid of their parents than the police. They're not always going to answer those questions.
Is that the standard? That the police, there has to be a belief by the police, a belief, a practical certainty that he's going to say incriminating things? And that's not what Miranda stands for.
And Miranda says that before the police conduct custodial interrogation, they have to provide warnings. And that custodial interrogation can be words or conduct on the part of the police that are reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating response.
Let me ask you this. Would it at least not have been better if they put the young man in a room and walked the mom into the room, closed the door, let him talk?
Well, here the police...
I'm not asking here. I'm asking would that not have been a better practice?
Well, not necessarily. If the police needed to monitor the juvenile. The juvenile suspected of attempted murder...
They monitor the juvenile by watching but not listening to the conversation.
Well, that's not clear from the record whether they could have safely done that here. And I don't know if that's feasible in every police station in the state.
Would they have felt the need, hypothetically, to monitor an attorney conversation?
No, because the attorney, they're not, obviously there's clear rules that they can't monitor the attorney-client.
Then why the need to monitor a conversation with mom?
Well, because the mother is a sympathetic visitor who could very well pass the juvenile something that he's not, that he shouldn't have, contraband, a weapon. That the police need to monitor that interaction. We shouldn't automatically assume that the mother's not going to be sympathetic and perhaps help.
Wouldn't she be screened for weapons at the door?
There's no evidence that that happened here, but then again, she would have to be frisked, her purse would have to be taken if she had one. You know, that would be more intrusive conduct on the part of the police. I mean, the fact that they could have done something better doesn't mean that what they did violated the Constitution.
So let's take this to its conclusion. If we accept your argument and reverse the appellate division judgment here, is there anything wrong for police then to be advised that in a case like this you can summon a parent, not provide warnings, and then listen to the conversation that unfolds between mother and child and report on it?
Well, I would think that if the police are standing in full view and not being deceptive, certainly they're not violating the Constitution. I mean, there's already a lot of required, there's already a heavy burden on the system by Miranda. Then there's pressure. There doesn't need to be extra layers of protection to have visitor warnings, to have privacy between a parent and a child to the extent of the attorney-client privilege. This court has already said in Prescia and its progeny, the parent is not the attorney.
The parent's already in a different category from other visitors. We're not dealing with a friend or cousin or whatever. The parent under Prescia has a particular status in terms of the need to notify, the presence at an interrogation. So if the parent's already being treated as a special individual, and I'm not talking about Miranda warnings to parents, why not the private conversation?
If it could be safely done, and if the state is not saying that that shouldn't be done, or that if it's requested that the state can allow that, if it's safely feasible, but there's nothing wrong with the police in the first instance to monitor any initial interaction between the mother and the child, Miranda is only required when the police are going to conduct a custodial interrogation.
We've imposed warnings in excess of Miranda to ensure that the person who is being interrogated or the subject of the investigation knows his rights. State versus Reed. Person, Miranda rights being held, the attorney's outside the door. We have, under our right against self-incrimination, required the police to tell the defendant, you know, your attorney is right outside the door. We've also imposed upon police, under our rule, that if the police have an arrest warrant and you're about to interrogate, you have to inform the person about that. Okay. So under our state rule, making certain that the person who is the target is fully informed of his rights, in addition to Miranda, has been something that we have done. I've given you two instances, but there are probably more.
In those two instances, this court has already addressed Reed in the Prussia context and said parents are not lawyers, and has expressly distinguished Reed and expressly distinguished parents. This is ground already covered by this court. And in the context of informing them of their charges, that's informing the person being interrogated of the charges.
I'm trying to see what is wrong when you have in custody a 15-year-old, I'll call child, okay, obviously not aware of his rights, and the mother not aware of their rights, just being told in this police-dominated atmosphere that, you know, anything that is said in this conversation is can be used against you. Like, what is so terrible about that?
Well, it's not terrible if the police decide to do it, but if it's terrible to convert that into yet another rigid requirement on top of what Miranda requires and on top of what pressure requires, and Your Honor suggested the mother has to know her rights. The mother has no rights here.
The mother is to protect the child. The reason why you tell the mother the rights is so that she can be the advisor to the 15-year-old who doesn't know his rights because he hasn't been informed of them, and even if he were told, might not understand Miranda because he's only 15 years old. That's the reason why you tell the mother.
Well, this court has never said that the parents have rights to Miranda warnings. This court had never said.
No, it's for the child.
How does the mother advise about whether the understanding of those rights if the mother has no idea what they are?
Well, if the police aren't going to conduct custodial interrogation, they're under no obligation to advise anybody. This can happen in other contexts just as easily. As I tried to say before, suppose the police arrest the juvenile in his home in front of his mother, and the mother starts bombarding him with questions. Are the police then obligated to say?
That's not a custodial interrogation.
If they arrest him and have him in handcuffs and they're going to take him down to the station, that's custody. And if they say he's under arrest, we're taking him down to the station, and she starts bombarding him with questions then, are the police obligated to say stop?
Isn't it a different situation when the police have summoned the mother to show up at headquarters?
Well, they're required to summon the mother to headquarters under pressure.
So I understand your argument that the police have complied with pressure in this case. Why don't you respond to what your colleagues, I anticipate, will argue, and that is that pressure has been perverted and turned on its head here.
Not by anything the police have done.
And that this child would have been better if mom had not shown up at all.
That's not the police department's fault. The police did nothing wrong to warrant the exclusionary rule. Obviously, if this court felt differently going forward, certainly it would be prospective only. The police did nothing to do an end-around around pressure or Miranda. Now, if the parent shows up and doesn't protect the child's rights to the satisfaction of his defense attorney, that's not the state's fault, it's not the police department's fault, and this court has already accounted for that possibility in case law. A parent could very much do that. A parent can encourage their child to speak and cooperate, and that could even be done before the police ever get involved in questioning or warning.
We've said that after the mother and the child are informed of their rights, then informed of their rights, knowledgeable of their rights, the mother then can speak with the child and give the child his or her options.
It would be unprecedented to give people Miranda warnings before when the police never question them. And this is not the functional equivalent of police interrogation. There's plenty of case law from the United States Supreme Court and throughout the country that merely allowing someone to talk to somebody in custody is the functional equivalent of interrogation.
This gets close to the Innis language, okay? If the mother is being... And I'm not saying purposely used, but it's somehow being used as a surrogate, that the police should know, okay, words or actions on the part of the police. And let's say the actions of the police are allowing the mother there into this area to question, that the police should know are reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating response from the suspect. That's getting pretty close, if not right on the mark of Innis. No?
It does not cross the line. Allowing someone to speak to somebody is not words or conduct on the part of somebody. In fact, calling pressure is more attendant to an arrest in New Jersey. It's like an automatic thing the police must do. It's like attendant to an arrest. The police are obligated to do it. It is not words or conduct on their part that's reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating response. I mean, it's possible it can elicit an incriminating response, but that mere possibility doesn't now impose the police new obligations that they've never been told that they had before.
If the police have no intention of questioning the juvenile, do they have to call the parent?
I think pressure requires that they call the parent if they're going to speak to, if they're going to interrogate. But again, under best practices, well, what's wrong with calling the parent even if they're not interrogating? A lot of police departments would call the parent anyway because they just took their child into custody. So I don't think there's anything wrong with calling the parent. In fact, if they didn't call the parent or they wouldn't allow the parent to speak to him and then they went to the child and started reading him his rights and he blurted something out, then people would say...
Of course we know that's forbidden.
Right, we know that's forbidden, but here the police allow the parent to talk. Do the police have to say as soon as they start talking? There's no requirement that that happens unless the police intend to interrogate. And there's no proof here. There's no evidence that the police choreographed this, planned it, hoped for it. And the United States Supreme Court said even if they did kind of think that it could have happened, that's not enough. It has to be words or conduct on their part that's reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating
response.
This doesn't meet that standard.
If we bless this, this is going to telegraph to the police, don't give those Miranda warnings. Do just what occurred over here. Listen in to the conversation between mom and the son or mom and the daughter and see what you learn. If you get incriminating stuff, good, go with that. If you don't, now give them their rights and interrogate.
Is
that really what the signal we want to be sending as a court?
Well, certainly what the officer did here, the officer was under no case law or obligation or warning that this was required upon him, that he was required to do this. This happened suddenly. This happened rapidly. It didn't appear to be like longly planned out. This happened within the matter of minutes. She showed up, she gets upset, she has to speak to him, she asks a few questions, she leaves crying. This happened quickly. Under the totality of circumstances test that this court outlined in Prescia, the brevity of the questioning does matter. The fact that if the defendant or
so
the
So
how
about going forward? You're talking about this. Do you think that we should be setting forth rules so that this isn't used as an end run?
Well, first of all, let me just say anything this court does prospectively should not apply to this case and to this officer. This officer didn't do any end run around anything. There's no evidence in the record he intended to end run around anything.
I'm asking going forward.
At the very least, it should be prospective only. But it's really not necessary because the purpose of the adult, presumably the parent's going to be an adult, they're going to know that the police are standing right there and anything elicited is going to be a fair game. They do not have rights.
Would it be a logical extension of Prescia, which is designed, as you've quoted for us, so that parent can serve as a buffer and assist with the understanding of rights, to say that when you summon a parent for that purpose, give them Miranda warnings, allow parent and child an opportunity to speak and consult in private, and then conduct your questioning? What would be wrong with that?
Well, it would be unnecessary. I don't know if there'd be anything wrong with it, but it's certainly unnecessary because it's presumed that the parent would act as a buffer and would be able to know when someone can overhear the conversation. What if they're talking and there's a co-defendant in there and the co-defendant overhears this conversation?
But why should the parent know that anything that's heard or overheard 10 feet away is going to be used against the child in
she
a criminal proceeding?
She really has no rights at that point. She is not under custodial
interrogation. Not what I asked. There's a reason the parent's there. The chief's tried to delve into that with you. Okay, what? And there's a reason why they're there. One of the reasons is kind of explain to the young person what their rights are. Why would the parent have any reason when they go speak to them and say, listen, you know, let's talk, but let's talk quietly, or just to assume that whatever is discussed may be used against the child? What reason would she have
to discuss that with it? Well, she
could. What reason would she have to believe that anything they say might be used against the child?
Because the police would be standing right there and overhear what's said.
So what? She doesn't know that. What reason does she? Let me ask it again. What reason does she have to believe at that point that what the police are standing right there? What do I care if I speak loudly or softly? What reason would she have to know that what they're talking about could be used against her son in a criminal prosecution?
It's common sense that the police...
Then why do we have Miranda?
Miranda is unique to the circumstance, to someone who was under the pressure of the custodial pressure and subject to interrogation. Miranda is very targeted to a person who's subject to those two pressurized situations. A parent is not under those pressurized situations. She's not in custody, and she's not going to be questioned. Miranda does not extend that far.
Take a deep breath. Slow down, all right? I'm just trying to get out from you. So the parent's there for a reason. The chief's tried to explore that. Juveniles are treated a little differently. Juveniles are treated a little differently. They go to talk to the juvenile, and you're saying she knows the police are there. There's nothing untoward about this loud conversations he's having with the police over here. And my question is simply that, untoward? Well, why is she worried that the police are standing right there? Why is she concerned about that? Because she doesn't have any idea, as far as I can tell, that anything they discuss may be used by the police. And she can't tell him, and he can't consider, and she doesn't know that we really ought to talk about this before we have this conversation. What reason does she have to believe?
Well, the reason that she has it would be common sense. The police are there, the police can hear it. What's said could be used. I mean, that's only the pressurized situation of custody and being the focus of custodial interrogation generates the need for warnings. This would be an unprecedented and unwarranted extension of those Miranda warnings, and certainly they were not incumbent upon the officer here to do that. And it's unnecessary, and this doesn't happen. We're not asking the court to bless this necessarily. I mean, it could be better practice to provide as much privacy as possible, but there may be context and circumstances where that's not possible.
Do we know if that was possible here?
Well, the record didn't explore that, but it wasn't. Things happened quickly. Maybe the parent could request privacy, or the parent could speak at a lower tone of voice. Suppose the police did offer privacy, but the parents still started speaking.
That would all be the totality issue. I mean, we don't have any of that here. I'm just asking, what happened when she got there, and what reason did she have to believe, as the person who was the buffer between the police, who are now going to use whatever is said in this conversation against the juvenile, what reason did she have to believe that something else maybe should take place so they could figure out what they're doing?
Well, there's no obligation that anybody who's not under the pressurized situation of custody and custodial interrogation is entitled to those warnings. And this would be a dramatic extension of the Miranda warnings, which are not warranted by this case.
I think the idea of pressure, the Miranda warnings are still addressed to the child.
Yes.
Right? This is not, there's no, nothing in pressure suggests that there's a Miranda warning to the parent.
That's right. There's no visitor warnings. There's no parent warnings. There's warnings to the child, which must be done in the presence of the parent.
So the parent's role, it's not spelled out too specifically, but the parent's role presumably is to listen to what the child's rights are and to act potentially to protect the child in the setting of the custodial interrogation.
When those child rights come into play as a result of custodial interrogation.
So that's a little bit of an expansion of Miranda to begin with in Prussia. I think the question, at least as I see it, the question here is whether in the peculiar circumstances that occurred here, how is the rule of Prussia applied in a way that is true to the spirit of what it's trying to accomplish?
Prussia never guaranteed, nor did its progeny guarantee, that the parent would be a foolproof protector of the interrogee's rights. The parent could advise the child to speak.
I mean, I think Prussia envisions that might in fact happen.
So the fact that Prussia maybe not have worked to the extent that the ACLU may not have liked does not mean that the police did anything wrong or that there was a constitutional violation in need of a remedy, that suppression is required here. None of that's required. It's more akin to a blurt out. I mean, the police do not have to warn against every potential blurt out. Like in the other context I give, suppose the police put a
code. This is not a blurt out. This is introducing the mother to the child who happens to be in some detention cage and knowing they're going to engage in a conversation while the police are overhearing it. That's not a blurt out.
It's closer to a blurt out than custodial interrogation, the state would adhere to that position. And if I could get to this example, suppose the police put a co-defendant in the cage with in the cell with the juvenile, and they engage in a conversation or argument, and they say something incriminating. The question's going to be, well, you should have known that that conversation was possible. You should have given the warnings at that point. Or what if, again, if they arrest the juvenile at his home and the mother's there, the mother could engage in a question right then and there. The police supposed to give warnings at that moment, even though they may not intend to give interrogation? It's just, where's the limiting principle? There's no Miranda warnings for visitors, even parents. Parents are there to help, but they're not
going
to be lawyers.
The other juvenile, the co-defendant, the other juvenile, the really anybody else but the parent is not within the realm of pressure, because it's pressure gives the parent a special and unique role. So I don't see any argument here that a cousin or a friend or whoever it may be would be in the same status as a parent.
Sometimes an adult guardian could be in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows, an older brother could
A guardian is in the same status as a parent.
Right,
but an older guardian is not in pressure, right?
Right, but the pressure...
I mean, an older brother is not in pressure.
Pressure has never stood for the proposition that parents are entitled to warnings when their children are not being subject to custodial interrogation.
Mr. Murawski, could the limiting principle be this? Because you said earlier that the mother was called down because in the transcript the detective says, we followed protocol, so we called her down. You said that's presumably because of pressure. Could the limiting principle be when she's called down to perform a role, she is initially advised what that role is? And I can't find any evidence in this transcript that she was ever told what her role is.
Well, she was not told what her role is because the police did not engage in custodial interrogation. Had the police engaged in custodial interrogation, she would have been involved in the warnings to the juvenile. She would have been present for that.
I know that's your position, but can you answer the question? Could that be a limiting principle from the other factual scenarios that you're talking about?
Perhaps it could be, but it's an unnecessary condition. It's an unnecessary requirement under these circumstances.
Your position, I'm sorry. No,
just one last thing. The reason I'm suggesting it is because it focuses on the unique role and purpose in having the parent there so that the rights are understood by the people who are in a position to exercise them when need be.
Well, right, the unique role of a parent does not automatically make all these additional requirements. And getting back to Reed, I think it was pressure or QN, the parent was trying to get to her child, and the police would not allow it in that case. And the defendant invoked Reed, and this court said, parents are not like lawyers. Parents do not have that same entitlement that they should have access to their child, automatic access to their child. In fact, there's even a requirement that even if the parents aren't there, they could still, under the totality of circumstances, be admissible.
That's true, but that doesn't risk the blurt out that we're dealing with now, according to your presentation.
Well, the law does not require that every potential risk needs to be addressed if by reasonable police conduct they learn about or overhear something that the state wishes to use in its case, that doesn't automatically mean something wrong happened, something unethical happened, or something unconstitutional happened.
If you were to be asked which is the least intrusive on police procedures, would it be direct warnings to a parent, which would be an extension of pressure, because pressure is a concept is the warning to the child in the presence of the parent, that's a different concept, or a private conversation without the police being put in a position of telling the parent what she's supposed to be doing?
Well, that would probably be fact-sensitive and depend on the circumstances. Maybe there are cases where a private conversation is feasible, and maybe plus the circumstances also have to suggest it, too. I mean, if the parent just quickly asks something to their child, that doesn't automatically mean the child's subjected to custodial interrogation.
No, but it seems to me that if there's an interrogation, if there's a room in the police station, which presumably there's a room where somebody can have a conversation, you could have the parent walk in and say, "We're going to give you an opportunity to speak to your son," and not put police in the position of having to advise, give some sort of direct advice to the parent as to how they should handle it, because I sense your concern about that, and I think that there are real issues with giving police the obligation to be advisors to parents. There may be all kinds of circumstances they're unaware of in the family. They have no idea. Right. Could be the crime could be a crime committed against another family member. There are a lot of complications with that. But what would be so difficult about having the parent walk in, summoned by the police, and say, "Okay, ma'am, thank you for coming, and we're going to give you an opportunity to speak with your son. And here's the room."
Well, the police will afford an opportunity to speak to the parent if they show up. If the police are not going to engage in the custodial interrogation or its equivalent, there's no legal requirement that they should do that. I mean, the fact that the police may overhear something that's useful to them does not trigger a constitutional violation.
Let's take this internal conference. Could the prosecution subpoena the mother before a grand jury to testify as to what the child said?
Well, there's no privilege. I mean, it would seem.
I'm saying that because if there is no parent-child privilege, then the most direct protection is for the child and the mother to be really advised of their rights when they're in the presence of police and they happen to be talking.
Well, that could be true in any context, even when the police aren't there. She could have said, "I talked to him at home in our kitchen," and she could be subpoenaed on that regard. That's not limited to the custodial situation.
What about this as a limiting principle? When you call a parent to headquarters for the purpose of abiding by pressure and taking a statement, give rights to the child in the presence of the parent, and then allow them to speak privately before interrogating. There's really no reason to be calling mom down if you're not going to question. So if you're calling mom down for the purpose of questioning, what about that as a limiting principle?
Well, Your Honor says before interrogation, and the state would agree, prior to interrogation, the full warning should be given. But we disagree with the notion that there's never any reason to call the parent down. The parent could be called just to notify them that their child's been arrested. There's nothing inherently wrong with the police notifying the parent of the situation, even if they didn't intend to conduct an interrogation.
I interpreted your answer earlier that this was likely done to abide by pressure as
likely
correct.
Was. Likely was.
So following up on that, why wouldn't that be a sensible procedure that abides by the purpose of pressure?
Because it would be an extension of pressure and a significant extension of the Miranda rule, even beyond what pressure requires. Pressure was designed to protect children in an interrogation setting. It wasn't designed to protect children from their parents. That's never been the purpose of Miranda. It's never been the purpose of pressure.
Okay, understood. Anything you'd like to add?
Not at this time.
Thank you. Ms. Aiello.
Good morning. The circumstances of this case strongly suggest that the police saw an opportunity to exploit an anguished mother's understandable need to speak with her child, and they seized it. But even if, as the Attorney General argues, the detective was not trying to elicit an incriminating statement, that he was simply trying to accommodate the mother's request to speak with her son and have legitimate reasons for monitoring the conversation, that doesn't matter. A straightforward application of the Innis likely to elicit test compels the conclusion that the appellate division reached. AA was subject to the functional equivalent of interrogation. The functional equivalent of interrogation are words or actions on the part of the police that the police should reasonably have known would elicit an incriminating response. The Attorney General's contention that there was no state action here is simply absurd. This was not a situation where the child was placed under arrest on the street. The mother saw from the window. She charged out and started bombarding the child with questions. That is absurd. That would be an example of where the child's incriminating statements were not the product of state action. The incriminating statements in this case were clearly the product of state action. The police called the mother down for the purpose of questioning the child because the police knew that the mother needed to be present and needed to give permission for questioning. When the mother arrived without telling the mother why she was there, the police supplied her not only with the charges, but details about the charges. And then when the mother, understandably, and that is the word that the detective used, the detective said, understandably, the mother got upset. And then because she finally found out that her child was charged with a very serious crime. And then when the mother understandably got upset and understandably wanted to speak with her son, the police were in total control over whether that would happen and how that would happen. The police were in complete control of setting the conditions under which that conversation took place. So there was clearly state action here. And it is also absurd for the Attorney General to argue that the police should not reasonably have known that the mother would confront the son and ask something about the nature of the charges or the details that the police supplied to her about the offense, and that is precisely what happened. She didn't simply go up to the cell and say, why are you here? Did you do it? She specifically asked about details that the police supplied her with. Is it true that you were on Wilkinson Avenue? Because I told you never to go on Wilkinson Avenue. So the Attorney General's contention that this was not interrogation is absurd. Yes, it was not express interrogation by the police, but it was clearly the functional equivalent of interrogation. And AA was subjected to this functional equivalent of interrogation without Miranda warnings. I never argued that the violation here was of the mother's rights. I mean, the mother does have rights. She has a right to participate in an interrogation and to be there to protect her child's rights when the police conduct interrogation. But the problem here is that her son was subjected to the functional equivalent of interrogation, and he was not advised of his rights. And he did not waive his rights and agree to participate in that functional equivalent of interrogation. In addition to violating AA's Miranda rights, the police action in this case constituted an intolerable perversion of State versus Prussia. Even if before the police monitored conversation took place, AA had been properly informed of his rights in the presence of his mother, and AA and his mother were made aware that whatever AA said could be used against him in court at a later date, the case would still represent a perversion of Prussia. When the purpose of a parent's presence at the police station is to assist the child in the exercise of his or her constitutional rights, the parent should not be the one who confronts the child with questions about the offense. The parent should not be the one who is eliciting incriminating information that the prosecutor may use at a later date against the child. That is the job of the police. As this court made clear in AS, the parent is not present to assume the role of the police, but rather to act as a buffer and advisor to assist the child in understanding their rights, acting intelligently in waiving those rights, and otherwise remaining calm in the face of interrogation. In this case, AA's mother was not acting in her role as buffer or advisor because she had not been informed that she had such a role. She was simply acting in the only role that she knew that she had, AA's mother.
So I'm clear, counsel.
I'm sorry.
Did you suggest earlier that it was inappropriate for the police to advise the mother of what the son was that had been arrested for, and that because of that it was a custodial investigation because he asked the questions?
Well, what I'm suggesting is that when the police advised the mother what the child had been arrested for and gave the mother details regarding the offense, the police should reasonably have known that once she was in receipt of that information, that when she saw her her son that she would likely want to talk about
that. The act of the police advising her mother what he had been arrested for, do you see anything wrong with that?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
And if they had, wouldn't it be followed at the mother would say, why are you here? And then it would come out anyway?
Exactly.
So the police did nothing wrong in that, in advising the mother of the charges.
They did nothing wrong in advising the mother of the charges. That's not the problem. The problem is that after advising the mother of the charges, they then took the mother to the son, and without warning the son of his rights or warning the mother that...
But even if they had, wouldn't it follow that the mother would likely, if she didn't know it was... First question would be, why are you here, of the son, and so it's sexually equivalent to the same thing?
I'm sorry?
Whether they told the mother the charge or not, when she went in to see the son, she first question would have been, why are you here? She didn't know. And so it would be the functional equivalent of telling her the charges. She would have questioned him on what happened.
So I think your question is, if the police...
I'm saying that your example doesn't matter. Whether they told her or not, what happened was going to happen. So the issue is, whether that's improper and how to correct. But it's...
Well, the problem is that the police didn't also tell the mother why she was there. I mean, the mother was called down to participate in the interrogation. She was called down because she has a right to be present during the interrogation. She has to give permission for her son to be interrogated.
She was called down because her son was arrested. I mean, you painted a very dark picture early on. And I understand the argument about interrogation, but the police called, said your son's been arrested and he's in custody. I think most mothers would have been down to the police station as quickly as they could get there, and then learned that he had been charged with murder. And then wanted to talk to her son. I mean, it makes some sense that is what should happen or did happen here. And no one's talked about this requirement with the police department that in a situation like that, a police officer has to be within 15 feet of the discussion. So there's a little more going on here, I think, than just the attempt on the part of the police to try to get statements from the defendant while the mother is talking. Do you follow?
Well, when the police called her, they called her so they could take a statement from the mother, and they should have made that clear to her. They should have made it clear why, because she would have no idea that that's why she was being called to the station. So they needed to make that clear to her.
I think we're missing with each other is the natural inclination when the police call and say your 15-year-old son has been arrested and he's down at the police station, that the mother's going to get in the car or somehow get down to the police station.
Yes.
Because her son is in custody.
Yes, and she's going to want to see her son, and
right.
She's going to want to speak to her son, and she's going to want to ask her son what happened. So that's why the police need to make clear to the mother that the reason that she's there is not so she can act on that motherly instinct and see her son, but that she's there for another reason as well.
Well, do they have to tell her anything more than the Miranda rights in the presence of her child? She's surrounded by police officers. Then anything that you people may be saying may be used against the child. Would that be sufficient, or are you suggesting more has to be told?
Interrogation begins?
No, before the mother is brought into the room. The child is in a detention cell. She's going to be permitted to speak with the child, and there are police officers all around. If the officer advises the child in the presence of the mother that anything that is said during this conversation can be used in a court of law, have the police officers at that point complied with the requirements of of Miranda plus.
Yes, if they explain that what is being said in that room
may be used against.
May be used against. Yes,
if they
that would be satisfactory to you.
If they explain that the answers to their questions would be used.
Whatever the child says to the mother may be used against him, so they'll know whether or not to be asking any questions. Is that the rule that you're looking for?
The rule that I'm looking for is that when the mother arrives at the station or when she's telephoned, the officer should make clear that they want to question the child and that they need her permission. They need to make that clear. Because, I mean, think about it. This court in Prussia, and I think in AS or QN, contemplated a situation where the parent would be absent from the interrogation room because the parent was truly unavailable, despite the police officer's efforts to find the parent, or because the parent was unwilling to come to the station and sit in on the interrogation.
You want to extend Prussia so that there has to be a call to the parent first? And they have to actually have a conversation with the parent before they can do any interrogation?
Well, I think the police, if they are asking the parent to come to the station for the purpose of interrogating the child, they need to make that clear to the parent. They need to tell the parent that we want to question your child and we need your permission and that you have the right to be present.
This very situation could have come up even if they were not even complying with pressure, they were simply telling a parent that the child had been arrested. This exact situation would have come up, could have come up. So what I'm suggesting to you is,
well,
if they're simply calling and saying, ma'am, your son's been arrested, and that's their purpose in calling.
But that's not their purpose in calling. Their purpose in calling is to get the, if they suggest to the mother that she needs to come to the station in any way whatsoever, they need to explain why they want her at the station. They need
Where is that? Where is that in the law? They could just say that your child has been arrested. You want to come down to headquarters?
Well, they need.
And as long as they don't do any questioning or the functional equivalent of questioning before Miranda, then it seems to me that the police have complied with their obligations. You're imposing all new sorts of things, telephone conversation requirements that don't seem to be anywhere in the law.
But how else would the police establish that a parent was unwilling to come down to the station and be present during the interrogation if they didn't explain that in the telephone call? Prussia contemplates a situation like that.
Well,
the absence of a parent could be excused if the state can establish that the parent didn't want to participate.
So you're right. Under that circumstance, you're right. If it's clear that they are going to interrogate the child, then they have to tell the parent. Okay, under that circumstance.
But that's what they...
Are you arguing that there is a separate duty to warn a parent as opposed to the duty to warn the child and have the present of the Miranda, not a new version of Miranda, not a special juvenile Miranda, the Miranda warnings, the ones that everybody's familiar with, in the presence of the parent? Because what I'm thinking, if you're saying that there is a separate duty to warn the parent and have a conversation about what it means to be a buffer,
that's not what I'm suggesting. I'm simply suggesting that when the police contact the parent on the telephone or at a minimum, when the parent arrives at the station, they don't simply say, your child's in custody and these are the charges, and then start giving the parent details about the charges. They need to make clear that the reason we called you down is that your child has been arrested and we would like to take a statement from him regarding the charges, and we need your permission to do that. Because that indicates to the parent that she has some rights here, because the parent does have rights.
But they don't have
to get their permission, because they can proceed if they can't find the parent, or the parent simply doesn't want to come down. And I could see a situation, let's say the
right.
victim in the, not this case, the victim in the charge, for which potentially the reason for the arrest, was a family member. It was the parent herself. There are all kinds of reasons a parent might not want to participate in that.
That's true, but the state would not be able to establish that the parent did not want to participate in the interrogation if the parent is never told that that is the reason she's being summoned to the station. That just needs to be made clear to the parent.
Even if she's not summoned there because they intend to interrogate the child, maybe they don't intend to interrogate the child, but the mother is told of the nature of the charge, the details of the charge, and then they say, you can speak with your child in the presence of all these police officers. You're going to, I'm assuming, you're going to argue the Miranda warning should be given to the child in the presence of the mother, so they'll know whatever he says may be used against him in a court, correct?
Of course.
Okay.
But that's not the situation that we have here, and that's typically not the situation. Yes, it's true that if the child were charged with a very minor crime, the police had absolutely no interest in interrogating the child and simply called the parent just to advise the parent that the child was in custody, and the parent came down and a similar scenario took place. Yes, it's true that the parent, the police would not have acted inappropriately in not making it clear to the parent that she has the right to sit in on the interrogation and that she has to give.
Well, we just don't know. We do not know. Now, obviously, you know, you're arguing that this was if not set up, it was at least a strategy that kind of evolved and they went with it.
Yes.
But we're hearing from the state that there was no strategy whatsoever. But the fact is, we just don't know what was the exact intent at all different times. We don't know whether she was called down as a courtesy. We have no idea.
Well, we know clearly because the detective testified multiple times that he intended to take a statement from the child and that he was waiting for the parent to arrive because he is aware that the parent needs to be present and that he needs to obtain the parent's permission. So we know that. That is clear. That's not in dispute. But I just want to get, can I just answer Justice Patterson's question or get back to your scenario? If this were a minor crime and the police had absolutely no interest in interrogating the child and conducting express questioning, still, if they told the mother the nature of the charges and the mother became upset and wanted to speak with the child and then they led the mother back, that's still exposing the child to the functional equivalent of interrogation, because under those circumstances, much like the circumstances here, the police reasonably should have known that once the mother saw, even if it's a minor crime, I mean, it's not minor to the mother, if a child commits any type of crime and has been arrested, the mother is going to want to ask the child about it. So the police would reasonably or should reasonably know under those circumstances that once that child is brought back and is put in contact with his mother, that the first words out of that mother's mouth are going to be something to the effect, did you do this? Why are you here? And that the child, given the relationship the children and parents have and the influence the parents have over their child, that the child would respond.
The prosecutor
so
argues
again,
but the prosecutor argues there's no evidence that the police did anything wrong, had any intention, and frankly, their contentions are backed up by the trial court's specific findings about the nature, circumstances, and totality of what went on here. What do you rely on to say this should be suppressed because the police acted knowingly, improperly in this case?
The police, perhaps the police did not have the intention to elicit an incriminating response. Perhaps this unfolded and the police weren't thinking, oh, this is a good way to get extract an incriminating statement from this child without first having to read Miranda warnings. Perhaps that wasn't going through their mind. They still should reasonably have known. Maybe that wasn't their intention.
Where in the record is there any... You're saying...
That's an objective standard.
No. You're saying, irrespective of what the trial court said and found, based upon listening to the officer and whatever other evidence there was, that I have no basis to find this was the functional equivalent of an interrogation. That I don't... He didn't make any findings that are consistent with your argument after hearing the testimony. And the state, frankly, says this shouldn't be suppressed under these circumstances because there's no basis to find any improper conduct or a violation of Persia because they called the mom. Didn't get a chance to do more than that other than tell her the charges.
Persia doesn't say that the police have to call the mom.
No.
Persia says that the police need to make every effort.
No, I understand that. They called her. She came down. Okay, I'm just saying, what is your basis for saying the police did anything wrong here? And in light of the trial court's findings, what do you base that on? That they did anything that's inconsistent with or a violation of our case law?
Well, they exposed the child to a situation where it was likely that he was going to incriminate himself.
And you base that on what?
With the circumstances surrounding the statement, the conditions under which the statement was made.
And
they called the mother down.
And the trial court listened to that and said, we don't find that. We don't find it's an innocent situation. We don't find it's the circumstance you're claiming.
Well, the trial court, I think, inappropriately relied too heavily on the fact that the police had not been doing the questioning, and it was the mother who was doing the questioning.
Right,
but it just needs to be police action. The police, and there was police action. Again, they called the mother to
right.
the station.
Which they felt they had to do.
Yes. They
Nothing
had
wrong with that, is there?
And they had complete... They told the mother about the charges, supplied her with details about the charges, and then they were the ones in complete control over whether she would speak to the child and how that would occur. They were the ones who unilaterally set the conditions
All right, let me back
under
you up
which
one
the
more
conversation
minute.
Took place.
Because what I'm really trying to get at is, you've answered a couple questions, and I'm just trying to clarify this. They called her, nothing wrong with that. They told her what the charges were. You agree there's nothing wrong with that?
Well, they told her what the charges were when she arrived at the station, but they
right.
never told
Hold
her
on.
Why she was there.
That's number two. Well, okay. Her son's been arrested. He's in a holding cell. He's charged with ag assault with a weapon. She's called down. She's advised of the charges against him. Nothing wrong with that at that point, correct? Nothing wrong at that point.
There's nothing wrong at that point.
Okay. And your argument is, I take it, that at that point they should have said, listen, we brought you down because we want to talk to your son about these charges, and we're going to explain to him what his rights are, right?
Yes, I think that's what they should have done, but the fact that they didn't do that isn't what I'm complaining about. What I'm complaining about is that once she became upset,
right,
and it was clear that she was upset about the charges and about what she had just heard. She didn't come in upset.
Okay,
she became upset when she heard the serious nature of the charges.
I understand.
Well, she
my next question is...
She didn't hear them from police. She said she heard about it from somebody else.
When she got there. Next question is, the scene is set. She's not going really far to see her son in the holding cell, is she? She walks over to him and says to him what she said to him.
Well, no, that's not what happened. She was in an interview room. The police brought her into an interview room, presumably the interview room that they had intended to bring the child into when the mother arrived so that they can begin the interrogation process, at which point the mother and child would have been advised that the child has Miranda rights. But What they did was, after telling her the nature of the charges, giving her details about the charges, watching her become understandably upset, and then asking to speak to the child, they did not bring the child into the interview room.
Right,
instead, they brought her out.
Let me get to my
That's complete police action. She wasn't free to wander. She didn't see her child and run
question.
Over there.
Let me get my question. Because that you probably wouldn't have an objection to, would you? If she did that, you'd be in a different position in terms of objecting to the statement. If she ran out of the room right to him. Anyway, let me get my question. My question is, if police said, all right, stay here, we're going to talk to him, and they go get him and bring him into the room, and with the intention of reading the Miranda rights to him, so she's there as a buffer, and she yells at him, what did you do? What were you doing there?
That's why, that's a possibility. That's a possibility.
Would you have a complaint?
I'm sorry?
Would you have a complaint about that?
I would have a complaint.
And what would
I would have my complaint would be that when the police summon the mother to the station or ask the mother, or even if she comes on her own, if they know that they want the mother present at the station and that they are waiting for the mother so that they can question the child, when the mother arrives, whether they called her on the phone or she arrived there voluntarily because she heard on the street that her son was arrested, when she arrives, when they come in contact with her, they need to
tell her what
their intention is.
Okay.
I'm sorry?
What do they need to tell her?
They need to tell her that your son has been arrested and we intend to question your son, but first we need your permission to do that.
Permission? Where do you get that from, by the way? You've said a few times that you need mom's permission. Is that beyond pressure? Suppose mom says, I don't want you to talk to my son. Can they bring mother and child in and read Miranda warnings to the child at that point?
I don't think that they could.
So where do you get that from?
The
mother has the right to listen to the Miranda warnings and tell the son, do not say another word.
But whose choice is it at that point? Can the mother override the child?
Yeah, the mother can invoke. I mean, that was made clear in Prussia and other cases by this court.
Can you tell us what you're relying on in Prussia?
Well, that's what happened in I think it was AS. The police made very clear that the mother could invoke the rights on the child's behalf and could cut off questioning at any time. And that's my understanding, that the mother does have that right.
Even if the child says, Mom,
I want to talk.
Yeah. I hear you, Mom. But I want to talk. You're saying the law says that the child can't talk?
Well, I think that the mother can invoke the right, the same way the mother can encourage a child
to
speak.
I thought the mother was there as an advisor. If she tells the child, don't talk. If the child says, Mom, I want to get this off my chest, you're saying that at that point the police have to cease the interrogation?
Have that right to invoke the...
Where is that?
That?
She passed
that
question.
Where is
that?
A lawyer can't do that.
I think we're not going to finish this argument before lunch, and you're welcome to look at AS. I don't see it in Prussia. And then tell us what passages in either case you're relying on. Is there anything else you wanted to present to us? I cut you short. You said
yes.
They need to tell her nature of the charges. Put aside permission for just a second. What else?
Yes, but when the mother...
Here are the charges.
Yes.
We want to question your child. What else do the police need to say to the parent?
Yes, but it's not only what the police need to say. It's the police need to avoid a situation like this.
Right.
And
how do they do that? I thought you were going to tell us a prophylactic measure that would avoid the situation.
Yes, well, I think explaining to the mother why she was there would be helpful. And in this situation, what the police should have done is they should have explained to the mother why she was there. And then when
explain to why she was there,
why they wanted her there.
It seems to me as to what that means. There's a big difference between you're here because we are intending to take a statement from your son and we would like you to be present here, or you're supposed to act as a buffer, and here's what that means.
No, they just need to explain that she has the right to be present during the interrogation. And that they need her permission to interrogate the son.
You'll help us with that later.
Okay.
Is there anything else you wanted to present? We're beyond
right.
a half
and,
hour
yeah,
at this point.
And they just need to avoid this situation. So when the mother asks to speak with the son, they need to explain, listen, they either need to accommodate her request and give the mother and the child an opportunity to speak privately.
We never requested that.
I'm sorry?
You said accommodate her request. She never requested that.
I understand that.
So how can they accommodate a request that's not made?
No, they need to accommodate her request to either accommodate her request to speak with the child and allow them to do so in a private setting. Or they just simply need to say, listen, we're going to bring your child in and then we're going to read him his rights. And you, in your presence, and if you want to speak to the child, or they could say, if you want to speak to the child, you can do so at the detention center later, but right now, we're going to bring him in, we're going to read him his rights, so at least she would be advised of the child's rights before she started. She would know that was going to happen.
Very good. I think we have your position. Is there anything else you wanted to argue? Because after lunch, I'm simply going to ask you to highlight for us passages in those two cases
okay.
and give us a cite. Okay? Good. We're going to take a...